Planet FM is a platform that champions diversity. Not all our programs reflect the views of the station. We encourage you to consider a wide range of information from trusted sources when making decisions about your health.
It doesn't protect us from assault. Now, the Crimes Act in New Zealand, 1961, gives you an interpretation under Section 2. And assault means the act of intentionally applying or attempting to apply force to the person of another, directly or indirectly, or threatening by any act or gesture to apply such force to the person of another. Electromagnetic radiation is a force. And if you do not consent to it, then whoever is touching you or penetrating you must stop. Otherwise, it's an offence under the Crimes Act 1961. It's as simple as that. So it's a very simple way that I stop towers and small cells, etc., here in Australia, and quite a lot of success in doing so. Now, we know that the 26 gigahertz band is a frequency that is billions of times higher than the frequency we are being exposed to right now. So the irradiation of the 26 gigahertz frequency will cause non-ionizing electromagnetic radiation to penetrate our bodies through both skin and tissue at 26 billion pulses per second, compared with only 50 pulses per second as found in the 50 hertz frequency as irradiated by many electrical appliances around the home.
Hi, this is Bruce Lipton, and you're listening to Planet FM.
Kia ora, greetings, and welcome to Planet FM 104.6. I'm Tim Lynch, and I trust that you are doing well. I invite you to stay with me over the next hour as we discuss and find ways to take care of our unique and magnificent green planet Earth. On the phone from Tasmania, Hobart, I have barrister Ray Broomhall, who I originally interviewed last year and whose interview is still making people sit up and take notice as more and more 5G Elon Musk satellites are deployed every month around our beleaguered planet. And I want to say kia ora, Ray, and thank you very much for sharing so much powerful information that I trust can empower us to get involved at a localized level to help us outpicture that which is operating in near-Earth orbit around our planet and do something prudent to deal with this, because it's to do with the invisibles that we cannot see and that we need to become acutely aware of. So thank you for coming to share with New Zealanders.
Kia ora, Tim, and to your listeners. Great to be back.
Thank you. Can you tell us what's happening at a local level throughout Australia, as many New Zealanders have been to Australia and hundreds of thousands have lived there, and including myself, lived there a number of times. What's going on at the grassroots level, Ray?
All right, at the grassroots level is we've formed a federal political party called the No 5G Party. I'm the president of it, and we've got over 1,000 members. And when the next federal election comes on, we'll be running candidates specifically on electromagnetic radiation issues. So that's the first thing. The next one is to just explain to you something that is probably very similar to New Zealand. Probably you've noticed that there's been a massive construction activity in Australia, not only in Australia but also in New Zealand, an unprecedented scale in upgrading and installing mobile phone towers and small cells for 5G. Now, in Australia, the telecommunications industry has been hastily preparing for the Australian government's 26 gigahertz 5G frequency sale. Now, last month, the Australian government completed one of its final stages in the national 5G rollout, and it did this by selling at auction 26 gigahertz frequency band to the telecommunications industry. Now, we know that the 26 gigahertz band is a frequency that is billions of times higher than the frequency we are being exposed to right now. So the irradiation of the 26 gigahertz frequency will cause non-ionizing electromagnetic radiation to penetrate our bodies through both skin and tissue at 26 billion pulses per second, compared with only 50 pulses per second as found in the 50 hertz frequency as irradiated by many electrical appliances around the home. Now, Just to give you a bit of a rough idea, Vodafone, which I believe is a major telco in New Zealand,
yes,
says this, that millimetre wave is used to refer to the wavelength of signals typically in the 24 to 28 gigahertz frequency range. Now, you probably haven't got that irradiated yet, but in Australia, we've just sold the 26 gigahertz frequency. Most mobile phones and towers are only at the 2.4 gigahertz to 5 gigahertz frequency, but they're about to expose us to 24 gigahertz. Now, Vodafone have said this, that these frequencies enable extremely high data throughout and capacity over short distances, such as busy urban areas, stadiums, train stations, airports. Although millimetre wave will form part of Vodafone's long-term 5G strategy, providing extra capacity in particular areas, it is not in use today. But that's what they're going for. Now, scientific research, this is what they're saying, shows that these frequencies, radio frequency energy, is absorbed superficially by the body, mostly by the skin. Now, what they're saying is it penetrates the skin. And I'm sure that people don't consent to that. Now, the World Health Organization advises that RF fields below 10 gigahertz penetrates exposed tissue. And it basically says that RF fields below 10 gigahertz penetrate exposed tissues and produce heating due to energy absorption. And the depth of penetration depends on the frequency of the field and is greater, believe it or not, for lower frequencies. And even the International Commission for Non-Ionising Radiation Protection advises that frequencies at 6 gigahertz penetrate the skin to a depth of 8.1 millimetres. Now, in Australia, and I'm sure New Zealand uses a similar, is called the APANSA,
yes,
which is the Australian Radiation and Nuclear Safety Agency. Now, this advises that electromagnetic radiation lower than 6 gigahertz penetrates tissue even deeper. Now, the APANSA advise that wireless base stations and small cells work by sending out RF-EME in the form of waves carrying information. When the RF-EME reaches objects, including people and animals, some of the energy carried by the waves is deposited in the object. Now, Dr. Ken Karapetis, who's the Assistant Director of APANSA's Assessment and Advice Section, is an expert on how radiation affects the human body. He explained that 5G is the fifth generation of telecommunication infrastructure, which provides connectivity over a wide range of frequencies to mobile phones and devices on the wireless network. Now, he says this, that the 5G network will initially use frequencies in the current mobile phone network, then move to higher frequencies, which I'd say would be the 26 gigahertz, where the depth of RF-EME penetration into human tissue is short. Consequently, this energy is absorbed mostly within the skin, where surface heating is the predominant effect. At these higher 5G frequencies, the limits in the APANSA safety standard are set to prevent excessive heating at the surface of the skin and the eye. Now, what this is basically telling us is that it's pretty obvious that electromagnetic radiation from 5G at the 26 gigahertz frequency will penetrate and touch our bodies. Now, just because we have the APANSA safety standards and other standards, it doesn't protect us from assault. Now, the Crimes Act in New Zealand, 1961, gives you an interpretation under Section 2. And assault means the act of intentionally applying or attempting to apply force to the person of another, directly or indirectly, or threatening by any act or gesture to apply such force to the person of another. Electromagnetic radiation is a force. And if you do not consent to it, then whoever is touching you or penetrating you must stop. Otherwise, it's an offence under the Crimes Act 1961. It's as simple as that. So it's a very simple way that I stop towers and small cells, etc., here in Australia, and quite a lot of success in doing so. Now, I'm not sure what you're doing in New Zealand, but that's what we're doing here. Okay?
This is very important.
Just to give you an idea. Pardon?
This is very important information for us to know, and is to be able to package it so simply so that ordinary homes and mums and dads can get it. Is there a,
yes,
is there a graphic that we can use as well? Because
the simplest way to explain it to you, Tim, is with electromagnetic radiation, with a frequency, if I'm exposed to radiation, if at every second I'm hit with 1 hertz, which is a cycle of radiation. Now, normal electricity operates at 50 hertz, so which basically means I get hit 50 times a second, I'm hit with that radiation. With mobile phones at the moment, I'm hit with 2.45 gigahertz between and 5 gigahertz per second, which means I'm hit with 2.45 billion cycles per second. So I'm getting a bit of feedback in my phone. Sorry about that. So at 26 gigahertz, that means I'm being penetrated and exposed to radiation at 26 billion cycles per second. It's insane. I'm going to continue. Now, I'm going to talk about cancer clusters and established health effects, etc., around the world. Now, there are numerous studies around the world that have found that exposure to non-ionizing electromagnetic radiation at only 50 pulses per second. There was a study done in 1996 in Australia by Dr. Bruce Hocking, a medical practitioner, and he did a peer-reviewed study of children being exposed to only 50 pulses per second, irradiated from 3 broadcast towers in Sydney. He found that there was a 60% increase in childhood deaths from childhood lymphatic leukemia in the immediate vicinity of those towers. There are numerous studies around the world that found similar findings to Dr. Hocking's Sydney Cancer Cluster studies, and these findings forced the International Agency for Research on Cancer and the World Health Organization to declare in 2002 that the frequency there was a consistent association between the exposure of non-ionizing electromagnetic radiation and childhood lymphatic leukemia. Did the industry listen to the WHO's declaration? No, because in 2011, the Roman Catholic Church was put to task in the Italian Supreme Court in regards to 19 children dying of childhood lymphatic leukemia and lymphomas who lived in close proximity to the radio towers of the Vatican radio station. The Supreme Court found the Vatican guilty, a Vatican cardinal, and the directors of Vatican Radio were convicted, ordered to pay compensation, and received a prison sentence. So the Vatican Radio clearly tested the evidence, examined expert witnesses such as medical doctors and scientists in a court of law as to the adverse health effects for the world to see. You cannot get a higher standard than a court of law to adduce whether evidence exists or not. In 2013, the Australian Commonwealth Specialist Medical Review Council, which is made up of specialist medical practitioners, held hearings, examined witnesses, and meticulously reviewed hundreds of peer-reviewed studies, and in conclusion, made a declaration to the Australian people that there is sound medical and scientific evidence to include exposure to non-ionising radiation as a factor in adult leukaemia. The Cancer Council of Australia advises that leukaemias are now the most common cancer diagnosed in Australian children, and that the incidence rate of childhood cancers has increased significantly by a total of 35% between 1983 and 2014. When the International Agency for Research in Cancer and the World Health Organization declared to the world of the consistent association between exposure and childhood leukemia back in 2002, it said that childhood leukemia was relatively rare. Well, today in 2021, leukemia is far from rare. It is now the most common cancer in Australian children. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to realise that mobile phones were introduced into Australia in 1981 and that the sharp increase in childhood leukaemia is no coincidence. Studies also, for many years now, have shown that dormant or latent viruses in humans can indeed be reactivated by exposure to non-ionising radiation as low as 50 cycles per second, which is 50 hertz. So imagine, this begs the question, what will 26 billion hertz do to a sleeping virus? Okay, so for example, scientists have tried to use microwaves to kill viruses with heat. It worked, but it didn't work below the heating effect. In fact, below the thermal heat effect, viruses were well and truly alive. Some sleeping dormant viruses woke up, and the non-thermal radiation increased the growth of the Klebsiella pneumonia bacteria at a phenomenal rate. Now, some leukemias are actually caused by the leukemia virus. Now, the leukemia virus is called the HTVL-1 virus and was the first human retrovirus discovered. Now, approximately 20 million people worldwide are infected with the HTVL-1 leukemia human retrovirus. approximately 90% of the infected individuals remain symptomatic carriers, which means they show no symptoms of carrying the virus and the symptoms are latent or dormant. Now, what I'm trying to say is that there is sound and medical evidence, including legal precedents set by courts in both Australian jurisdictions and around the world, that our penetration of our bodies with the non-ionising electromagnetic radiation poses an extreme risk of harm to our health. Yet the Australian government, I'm not sure what the New Zealand government is doing, but the telecommunications industry and the Australian Radiation Protection and Nuclear Safety Agency that is supposed to protect you and I from this radiation exposure has turned a blind eye in regards to our health. In particular, they admit quite readily that it penetrates and exposes our skin, including our kids. Okay? So I hope that gives you a bit of a rough idea of where I'm coming from and where we are here in Australia.
Yes.
In regards to satellite, you'll probably know there's a petition that's been made by the Healthy Heavens Trust Initiative, which I'm a member of, where we've filed against Elon Musk and other satellite providers in exposing us with electromagnetic radiation from satellites. And our concern is that we do not know what the actual exposure in power density or an electric field will be from this radiation. Now, I'm just going to explain one other thing, is that in the PANSA safety standard, there's a supporting document by a gentleman called Dr. Bruce Hocking and Dobbo. There's two that have put this study together. And what they have found is that electromagnetic radiation, particularly in the electric field, that if anyone is exposed to an electric field of over 0.75 volts per metre, then that can affect the synapse activity of the brain. At 6 volts per metre, it will affect nerves. At 12 volts per metre, it'll affect cardiac muscle. And it actually advises that if you're at 12 volts per metre and someone's been exposed, emergency medical treatment should be arranged immediately. They also say that there is absolutely no cure to exposure to non-ionising radiation. And the issue here is, the reason I raise that is because here in Australia, I've found towers that have been irradiating at 18 volts per metre, which is exposing residents and kids in schools, etc., to that radiation. Now, on a final note,
okay,
we're also going against Wi-Fi in schools, where we have what we call a duty of care issue with schools here in Australia. If they're allowing Wi-Fi, which is wireless radiation, to occur within their school, then they are potentially or technically assaulting the children. In Australia, they've connected most of the schools to fibre optic cable, which is a safe alternative. But what they're doing, the school's going from the fibre optic node at the school and then converting it all to wireless. And we're saying that you can't do that. You should be converting it all to wired. Anyway, there's a big matter going on at the moment where we're actually taking, particularly the South Australian Department of Education, to task on this matter.
So it's a big issue for the human race. I mean, we're basically going to be living in a total cloud of electromagnetic frequencies and radiation, and we just don't know. We're just another experiment in the game plan.
Exactly. And if we start, well, at the moment we've got about, 3,000 to 4,000 satellites which are planned or are orbiting now. They've actually got 100,000 satellites will be up there within the next 5 years. Now, put on top of that, not only the 100,000 satellites, but we also have what we call high-altitude platform stations. Now, a lot of people don't know about these things. They're launched from Australia in Wyndham, and they go up into the stratosphere. So not actually in space, so they're like a drone that can fly up there for months. They're equivalent to 1,800 base stations each. And they circulate it in a 200-kilometre circumference. They also connect and talk directly to what we call base stations, Earth-based stations, which are designed to connect with the satellites and the high-altitude platform stations and also your towers. So there's a real reason why this is all happening. Have you ever heard of wireless power transfer before, Tim?
Only in the last interview of you.
Well, that's what's going on. So what they're doing is they're getting the fact that you can get, there's no need to have with 5G, is that you can walk around with your mobile phone and never have to plug it into the wall to get it charged, because it's going to be charged automatically through the air by wireless electricity. And you'll find the same thing will occur with all your appliances in your home, so it'll all be smart appliances. So your TV, your stove, refrigerator, everything will be connected wirelessly to electricity. That's why we have autonomous vehicles. Autonomous vehicles, they're really pushing to have all vehicles electric. And as you're driving down the streets past a small cell, it'll automatically charge your vehicle. Wireless power transfer has been in the pipeline since 1965. And that's what 5G technology is not only going to give us data transfer, but it's also going to give us electromagnetic energy transfer.
I know. It'd be good for a race of robots, but we're human flesh and soul, and it's great. But I'm hearing this very clearly.
That's exactly right, Tim. And my concern is that if we've got this plethora of radiation, what is the magnetic field going to be? Particularly since the World Health Organization has declared that we should not be exposed to anything over 0.3 of a microtesla, because there's a close association between that exposure at that frequency or that amount at 0.3 of a microtesla and childhood lymphatic leukemia. Now, the mobile phone I'm ringing or talking, you know, most people have, which are your Galaxies, your iPhones, etc., are radiated around, and I've got studies that show that they are radiated around 6,200 microtesla. So 0.3 of a microtesla is what the World Health Organization is saying you should not be exposed long term. And yet here we've got our own devices are over 6,200 microtesla.
I'm just sort of short of words on this one, because really what's happening is that the whole system is essentially corrupt. There's too many lies, there's untruths. The people are not actually have any duty of care whatsoever.
Well, the whole issue is that this misinformation that's going around, they're trying to blame no 5G activists, etc., passing misinformation. That's not correct. Maybe some are, but the majority aren't. And the reality is that there are adverse health effects which have been established in courts around the world. Doctors have exposed it. There are studies out there. Give an idea, there was a study done with ORSA, which is a electromagnetic radiation scientific organisation here in Australia, and they had the world's largest database on adverse health effects. Now, they've found that there is a scientific consensus that 68% of all studies show an adverse health effect. Only 24% of all studies around the world show no effect.
Well, that should stop
them. The scientific consensus is overwhelming.
It is. It's profound. And, I mean, what I can't quite work it out is that are all the leaves on the grass and leaves and trees and gardens, are they just going to wither as well? What about all the insects, particularly our bees and the birds around the house? I mean, it was the other day I thought it was very interesting. I was walking along the road at the beach, and all the miners, these birds that originally came from India, these minor birds were down on the beach and they were not up by the houses. And I took a photo of them. I thought, oh, well, I'll just keep an eye out on this, because if you're further away from the houses and down on the beach, well, miners don't go to the beach, gulls go to the beach. So I don't know what sort of effect is going to be happening or is happening on all the whole animal kingdom.
Well, it's actually well established that cattle, livestock, such as they're under high-voltage power lines, it does, in fact, reduce the birthing rates of those cattle. And there is, for example, I've taken some matters with some pastoralists against some telcos in regards to that already, and we were successful. So I guess the issue here is that, yes, it does affect, if it can affect us, it also affects animals.
Okay, well, have you got some ways in which we can organise New Zealanders, get them really, one, educate them.
And I think, yes, education is the key. If they'd like, they can. We have no 5G party here in Australia. Most Facebook groups are very out there in showing most of the evidence that's out there. But with the no 5G party, we only formed in February as an official political party. And we're currently putting everything together on our website, which is available to anyone, which will have resources there. But the most important thing is that what I would say is that if you do not consent to being touched or penetrated by this radiation in your own home, then you should let the telcos know about it. I do not consent to you exposing me or my family to the radiation coming from your facility. The key to starting everything for you later down the track, if you wish to sue or you wish to make complaint with the police in regards to an assault, etc., but you'd have to go and see a lawyer about all that. But the reality is to set you, something that you can do is make it very, very clear that you do not consent to be touched and penetrated. Just because the APANSA safety standard says that it's safe, they haven't taken into context the assault issue at all, which is, I do not wish to be touched or penetrated by this radiation. End of story.
Thank you. And that's www.wesayno25gInAustralia.com. And there's another one, emraustralia.com. You're on both of these websites. Plus, you've got a new Facebook page. Is facebook.com/electrosensitivityaustralia.
Well, these are sites that have actually talked about me. I'm not actually a party to that, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So the best place to find would be the No 5G Party. So if you go no5gparty.org.au, you'll get our website.
Thank you. Okay.
This is EMR Australia, a very good site.
Oh, very good. Right. Well, other different states got different processes at the moment. When I say is everything's been deployed all at the same time. The Australian telecom industry is getting Queensland, New South Wales, Victoria, South Australia, etc., all on board to implement all of this at the same time.
Well, the scary thing is it's about implementing it at the 26 gigahertz frequency. So at the moment, they really haven't turned on 5G in the full millimetre wave spectrums. So that's the concern. Now, they've done that around the world, though. Wuhan, United States, etc., have all been connected to 26 gigahertz. We're about to be. And that's my biggest concern.
Yes, well, I mean, we could have a whole lot of health problems jump up all at a particular time. If they turn it on at 12 o'clock at night or something like that, you never can tell by 8 o'clock next morning.
The various symptoms are, look, we've got doctors now that are starting to realise that electromagnetic hypersensitivity, known as EHS, is in fact an established medical condition. And so much so that in Australia, they formed the Australian Society for Electromagnetic Radiation Medicine, and the doctors teaching other doctors about how to treat and diagnose patients with electromagnetic hypersensitivity. And how could I explain it? Doctors are now saying that exposure to non-ionizing electromagnetic radiation at certain levels poses an extreme risk of harm to health. And I have medical reports that I used in my work, which show clearly the exposure risk and that it does pose an extreme risk of harm.
Okay, thank you for that. And so, again, the doctors seem to be on the firing line because we see all this. We've got the COVID to deal with, and now we've got also this radiation is happening. There's so many issues going on at the moment.
Okay. What I can tell you is that one of my doctors, who provided a medical report for a very high-profile case, the other side could not provide a medical report because it wasn't their patient. So they had to find a way of attacking and undermining the credibility of my doctor's report. So what it caused was the chief medical officer of the state decided to take my doctor on complaint to the medical authorities known as ARPRA. Now, ARPRA is the medical board. Now, he was investigated. My doctor was investigated under that complaint. And at the end of it, the ARPRA medical board found that his advice was perfectly sound and was professional, and there was no complaint. Because in effect, what he was doing was diagnosing his patients with electromagnetic hypersensitivity. And so here have the medical board have actually agreed with him in essence.
Have all the other states now acknowledged that this is the case?
Well, they have to, because we now have confirmation from ARPRA that this sort of diagnosis and treatment, and there is actually medication that can be applied to people who have got EHS, to alleviate some of the symptoms. There are biological markers now that doctors can use to test to see if somebody is sensitive or not to electromagnetic radiation. So it's now becoming an established form of medical practice.
Yes, what I'm just trying to work out is, would every doctor in Australia now know of this case?
Not necessarily, no. That's why the Australian Society for Electromagnetic Radiation Medicine has been formed to educate other doctors, not only in Australia, but around the world. I think at the last, they had 16 doctors, specifically just from South Africa, for example, that were doing a training program with TASREM. Yeah. So it's becoming a lot more mainstream than people realise. And doctors have always thought that, oh, if I come out and talk about electromagnetic hypersensitivity, it will be seen as they could be taken before a medical board, etc. But the reality is that if they do it correctly and they use established science, then they'll be okay.
Very good. Now, can you tell us, Ray, about class action lawsuits?
All right. Class actions are representative actions. So basically, it's around 7 people or more can get involved in what we call a class action. The problem with a class action is you have to prove injury. And at the way things are at the moment, how do you prove that a person has electromagnetic hypersensitivity as a direct result of exposure from a particular tower? Very hard to do. But you can certainly do a class action in regards to a complaint under assault, for example, for criminal code matters. I'm not sure what the law is in New Zealand, but in Australia you can start up a class action if you want to against the criminal matters. But I personally don't touch class actions, even though you've probably seen it in some websites about me doing so. I have spoken about class action, but I don't actually do them.
Okay, yeah, thank you. I picked that up. One of the websites. Yes, well, doing the research, having the time, I mean, gosh, it's just...
It's been a necessity of mine. When I first started this back in, oh, crikey, we'd be going back 8, 9 years ago, my first client was a lady that said she was allergic to electromagnetic radiation. And I thought, well, it's a bit strange. And she was passed to me by Disability Support Services. And I looked into it, and I started to feel this lady was telling the truth. And I had to take her word for it, and I looked further into it. And then we started taking the matter to court. And that opened up the groundways where my phone was just ringing red hot from other sufferers around Australia and the world. And I still get it today. I'm getting at least 50 to 60 phone calls a day from people around the world wanting me to help. So I'm very time poor when it comes to looking for people with these sorts of issues, as you can imagine.
I hear you. I mean, just in this 55-minute program, you have 55 telephone calls that you've missed. I might have saved you a wee while.
Updated with calls from New Zealand there.
Well, I won't let your telephone number out. Well, yes, because... Education.
That's the tip of the iceberg, Tim.
Yes, yes. Well, you see, this is what's happening, is that the results are not coming out. At the moment in New Zealand, we don't know how many suicides there have been in the last 18 months in this country. It's all been hushed up completely, and we just don't know what's going on. We want transparency in our government because they are our elected servants. We pay them to tell us the truth. I'm speaking with Ray Broomhall of no5gparty.org.au.
What I can tell you, which is very exciting, is that TASREM, the doctors from TASREM, are actually investigating the people who are saying that when you're injected with a COVID-19 vaccination, that their vaccination sites in some parts of their body have become magnetised.
I've seen that.
Because of nanoparticles. Now, when I've been talking to these doctors, they're starting to feel that there's a lot of credibility behind that. And they're actually investigating to see what is actually the nanoparticles that are supposedly causing this magnetic field issue. Now, in regards to electromagnetic radiation, the doctors are saying if this is true, that there are magnetic issues in regards to the vaccinations, it's going to have dire consequences on electromagnetic fields within the human body. So as soon as that comes out, I'll let you know, Tim.
Yes, well, more and more doctors overseas, they're scrambling now to get all this information out, and I know I'm diverging slightly, but there's a new Nuremberg trial coming up on the Isle of Man in September in relationship to what's going on within this whole, I don't know what you call it, because some people call it a sham, some people call it a pandemic, others call it a plandemic. We will have to wait until the Nuremberg trial comes out, and we don't know yet how it's going to happen, but there's Dr. Rainer Fulmich.
Yeah, I speak with him on a regular basis.
Oh, you do? Well, are you allowed to give us an insight? Because many of us in the, shall we say, the activist side of the fence, we are running on empty at many levels, because there are so many things coming out that we can't get on and have a life with our friends and family. So is there any little part that you can offer up to New Zealanders to let them know that we're...
What I can say is that we're working very hard at looking at the association between not only vaccination issues, but also COVID-19 itself and dormant viruses being activated. One theory is that the COVID-19 vaccination, they use a vector animal to create the vaccine. And they use mice that have been infected with the murine leukemia virus. Now, the murine leukemia virus is the closest thing to the COVID-19 virus. Now, it's a human retrovirus, which means that it can be transferred from animal to human and vice versa. So what we're saying is, if that's true, that humans are being infected with the murine leukemia virus, we all know what electromagnetic radiation does to the leukemia viruses and possibly activation of dormant virus. What other viruses are being transmitted or transferred from animal to human that have been activated by radiation? And that's our concern. And the secondary infections, which are caused by pneumonia bacteria, studies have shown for a long time now, have shown that exposure at 50 hertz or above can actually increase the growth of the bacteria, not kill it.
Well, because what I've heard, there's a lot of, shall we say, secret laboratories around, particularly I've heard in Georgia, which is in the Caucasus, just not far from the Black Sea, and also in the Ukraine. And these are essentially military-grade laboratories, and they're under the radar, they're in a quiet place nobody knows about, and they're fiddling and gene-jockeying all this type of technology to create all sorts of, I don't know, horrible viruses. I mean, they're military-use bioweapons, from what I've heard.
Well, I can't comment on that. I can't confirm all that, but it wouldn't surprise me. Viruses and... I'll leave it at that.
Yes.
I'll be very careful what I say.
That's right. Because some people, I'm jumping away again, some people say that they actually haven't isolated the coronavirus, the latest from Wuhan. They actually haven't isolated it.
Once a virus is activated, so let's say it's asleep, it's dormant, it's activated, then it becomes virulent. And no matter where you go around the world, that person that's had an activated virus within their system becomes infectious. It's all about waking up viruses, in my opinion. And when you start playing around with these frequencies, you only have to Google it to see it, and you'll realise that, yes, viruses, dormant viruses, a good example would be herpes. You have the what we call the herpes virus, and the herpes virus, when exposed to radiation, actually becomes active. Every one of us has the dormant herpes virus inside us. And sometimes when you're exposed to sunlight, which is also a form of electromagnetic radiation, but not only that, but most astronauts, when they go into space and come home, because they're in an electrical confinement in the space capsule, most of them come back with activated Epstein-Barr or herpes virus.
Yes. Mm. Well, there's a lot going on because is it Carrie Mullis, who was the one who got the Nobel Prize and who was also had the CPR he made that technology, he has got a whole different story on it. He said if you use that technology, you can find anything in the human body because we're breathing in a zillion types of old ancient flu viruses or colds or all sorts of things. And if you put a swab up your nose and keep on swabbing up there, you'll find something. And this is where a lot of people are finding that they may have one small little coronavirus, and finally after numerous probes up your nose or nasal passage, they find it, and then they turn around and say, yes, you're positive, and you've got to be locked away for 2 weeks.
Well, there's an issue there where there's the informed consent issue. What I'm concerned about is that doctors are going around and giving patients these vaccinations. But are they telling the patient the true dangers associated with taking that vaccination?
I don't think so.
And if pharmacists or nurses inject, they're not giving informed consent to the patient, are they?
Definitely.
Because they're not qualified to do so. So my theory is this, is that doctors should only be the ones that should be prescribing or giving these vaccinations, and they should give the patient thoroughly, fully informed consent. So that means that if I give consent to something and I haven't been told the real problem behind that particular vaccination and I get sick about it with it later, I can sue because it wasn't informed consent, which basically means I didn't give consent.
Well, I agree with you. However, I was under the impression like Pfizer Corporation put the squeeze on New Zealand government, and the New Zealand government has essentially allowed them scot-free to be not caught up in any litigation if there is a injury or a death. This is what I'm...
Well, that hasn't been tested, has it? I mean, as a lawyer, that's what we do. We always find a solution to problems. Now, if there's an immunity granted to these, there's no immunity from liability, because the liability is just passed to the government. So if I've been given a vaccination, in my opinion, and it causes me to have blood clots or have something drastic, let's say 5 years down the track, I start growing another head or something like, I mean, just the hypothetical, and they knew about it, there is still liability issues. But if the Australian government or the New Zealand government decide to give an immunity, well, who's liable still? There's still got to be some recourse. And the way I see it is that the liability is passed from that, which I think's wrong, is passed from the pharmaceutical companies or big pharma to your own government.
Okay, yes. Well, usually what they do is they socialise the losses. So the corporations can get away with it from a capitalistic point of view. But then when there is a problem, they then socialise it and have the government come in and pay the costs, just like when the Wall Street had its problems way back in 2008, 2009. So, yeah, well, I mean, this is what we're dealing with, Ray, is that there's a sheer lack of honesty and integrity. There's no...
I think to everyone's... There's been a lot of hype about the COVID-19 issue, and I can't deny that there's been a lot of deaths. There is a problem with this virus, and it is getting around the world. The thing is, countries like Singapore just announced that COVID is no longer a problem. They've just said, that's it. It's just like the common flu. We're not going to go through counting cases anymore. That's it. COVID's just like, we're putting the relegation of just a normal flu, and that's it, and we'll get on with life. I think there's been a lot of concerns in Australia particular, and I'm not sure how New Zealand is, but there hasn't really been that many deaths attributed to COVID-19. And yet they're putting the entire population to task. It's getting to the point where you can't get on airlines soon unless you've been vaccinated. That's another legal issue on its own. They're denying you essential services if you don't prove that you've been vaccinated. You can't enter into certain employments. You can't do this, you can't do that. There are some legal implications in regards to that, and we're looking into that as we speak.
There's ivermectin, there's hydroxychloroquine and zinc.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people need to just get out there and get into the sun. I think this is one of the big things here. Get vitamin D, vitamin C. I know that the health department, when they locked down New Zealand last year, the first thing they needed to have done was, okay, New Zealanders, get out in the sun when you can in your section of your house, or if you can get to the park and walk to a park, eat your own organic veggies, get in and grow fresh, vital food, because what's happening is that most people are eating now factory food or what I'd call industrial food. There's plenty of sprays all over it. It's not really food for a healthy growing child or baby. And we needed to make sure that we didn't have to drink sanitised water because there's chlorine and fluoride in the water. There's a whole lot of issues relating to the fact that what we're taking into our body is not as healthy as it could be, because my choices, I have what I think is the best water and the best food that I can afford. I can't always afford organic food, but take care of ourselves. And yet there's been no leadership at the higher echelons of the health departments across New Zealand on this.
Yeah, there are other areas of law that I look into, particularly pesticide issues, tick-borne diseases, those sorts of things, and electromagnetic radiation, sort of what you call on the outer skirts of what everybody thinks about, but the governments are very slow to react to, and that's what I enjoy doing.
The governments are quick to react on certain issues. I've seen what the Victorian police have done to a lot of people, but on other issues, they're very, very, as you say, extremely slow. I remember when they first had the lockdown in New Zealand, the airports were just porous in this country. We've only got four major airports, but Auckland Airport was just totally porous. The New Zealand Herald did some very good articles on this, saying that some passengers were gobsmacked that they'd actually got in and they were out in the outer lounge being picked up by their friends, and they had realised that our authorities, our biosecurity, had just allowed them to go through. And so we're dealing with, I don't know, an inept response on certain levels. I most probably will get my backside kicked from the system.
Well, Tasmania is very similar to New Zealand because we're a separate island from the mainland. So Australia, we call the mainland, and Tassie's a little island down the bottom. And we've been quite strict on not having lockdowns in the actual state. To give you an idea, we haven't had a COVID case for over a year down here in Tassie, and it's only because they've been keeping an eye on the border and making sure that the screening is done quite scrupulous as people coming into the state, onto our island. And I'd say New Zealand would be credited, needs a pat on the back for probably doing the same.
Yes.
But actually having lockdowns to avoid that in the first place, it's a tough one.
Well, it is a tough one because we see what's happened in Victoria. I mean, they've nearly traumatised the people in that state the way it has been operated on. The Premier really came down with a clamp, and for some unknown reason he's disappeared off the scene at the moment too. So anyway, well look, Ray, we're in 55 minutes and there's been a lot of big there's been some pretty long gaps, and I know that once I take all these gaps out we're going to be down to 50 minutes, so I'm sorry, I'm going to have to stretch you out.
That's okay.
I'm glad to hear that. Yes, well you see, I mean, we at the moment in New Zealand, we're looking at all sorts of ways in which we can respond to 5G and also to the vaccinations. And a lot of New Zealanders have just become aware recently that New Zealand is a corporation of the City of London, this sort of one square mile of the inner city of London. And they're finding out that Australia and Canada as well. And so it's just a very interesting thing that we are now starting to pull back the curtain and look at the origins of how we in Australia and New Zealand came about. I have a lawyer friend up in Queensland once. He said to me, he said, come and have a look at this. I'm opening up the first fleet that came out from England with all the so-called prisoners. And he said, guess what? There's my name there. His great-great-great-grandfather had been taken from England because he stole something very small. And here is a lawyer. And of course, then we find out that it was a colony, and the British East India Company of Britain too was a, shall we say, a wild card corporation that had freedom to do all sorts of things. Hence, they took all this opium to China and got maybe many, many, many millions of people caught up as opium addicts. So have you just heard, I don't want you necessarily to say much more, have you heard that Australia too is a corporation of the City of London?
More so in Washington, you'll find that in regards to trying to raise funds for the National Broadband Network, they did set up a system with the United States Securities side of things where it made a registration. But New Zealand did the same. More so in Washington than London. I haven't checked out the London issue yet, but they're denying that the part about it being formed a corporation, which was gained under freedom of information, has got red lines through it. So we're not sure if that's actually still on vogue or if they've just put that as something later.
Yes, there's something on the Securities Exchange Commission, and there's another name called Dun and Bradstreet. They are something else. Yeah, so, well, look, we, as a humanity, are in a situation. It's like 20,000 years ago, the original inhabitants of Australia could wake up, and they may be living under a rock ledge, maybe under a tree, and they would stand up, look around them, dawn is happening, and they would realise that they could wander and pick and hunt and forage and fish, and it was all free. They could just go and do it. Yes, there could be tribal boundaries, but essentially they were free beings. Today, we have passports and licences, and we also have to have, in many cases, permissions to go certain areas. We have security and surveillance going on 24/7 now in our world. There has been a gigantic shift in the last so many years from being a free being to one now where we have to comply to so many different issues to do our daily life.
There's one simple solution to that, and that is form a political party and start changing laws. That's the reality. That's why we formed the No5G party, to try and influence and persuade and educate the other parties to adopt our policies, etc. But it will obviously evolve into something greater, hopefully, once after the election. But the reality is I think the only way to do it is you can't beat them, join them. And the way to do that is to get involved in politics, start changing the laws to make it a lot freer and a lot more open and protect your homeland. Because the Maori ethos is to protect, and protect its land and its people.
Kaitiakitanga is called, yes.
That's it.
Yes. And the other thing is, too, to be a sovereign being, and a sovereign being is meaning is between us and, as people will say, our creator. Wherever we come from, we need to be sovereign. And I have heard that they're whispering at the moment that laws are going to be passed in this country that if anybody talks about sovereignty, that is now going to be classified as being part of a terrorist organisation.
That's outrageous.
This is exactly what people are talking about. And I mean,
the very term of voting, the whole thing about having protection from the Queen is you're handing over your sovereignty, your individual sovereignty, to the Queen to protect you. And not only that, when you vote, you're handing over your sovereignty to your right to vote. That's your sovereign freedom, etc. And you're agreeing and consenting to laws through a parliament. And that's how it works. It's all about consent. Sovereignty means that you're able to enter into contracts with other people, either governments, crown sovereigns, or anybody else. And it's all about consenting or not consenting. And if you consent to a law, it means that, let's say, a law is passed in New Zealand, for example, you've consented by your vote, by passing on your sovereignty to those that you've elected to do your bidding.
I hear you. But what has been said in certain circles is that our government is illegal. And that's...
Well, that's been raised here in Australia too. And I'll tell you now, you've got Buckley's are getting that over the line in High Court, or they're just not going to entertain it.
That's right.
You've got to have some sort of way of getting your argument across. And a good example is there's been a lot of proponents here in Australia saying that Australia, every law in Australia since 1901 when we became federated, doesn't exist because it's illegal. Well, the High Court's not going to entertain that because it'll cause absolute bedlam.
That's right. I hear you. They're just going to walk away from it. And that's the challenge on that one. And, yeah, there was something else that I was just going to drop in, but sadly it's sort of shot away. Oh, yes, the No5G party in Australia. So you will have a large, shall we say, manifesto saying we're going to look at this particular situation, we're going to look at that,
yes.
We're going to look at a whole number of very important issues, and we're going to change the law on every one of them. That's where you'll get people...
That's pretty much it. And it's more an education. We understand we're only a minority party, but the reality is that hopefully it'll educate as many people as we can to understand the problems with exposure to radiation. Now, we don't expect technically to get elected. That'd be absolutely amazing if we did. But the reality is that we've got to be realists, and really more about educating other parties.
That's right.
If they want to get rid of us, they adopt our policies.
Yes.
It's as simple as that. Unfortunately, since the COVID issue, when we put our application in for registration as a political party, COVID-19 didn't exist at the time. So all our policies and everything were put in stone at that time. But we're now changing them to be more COVID-19 specific.
Thank you, yes. Yeah. Now, can I ask one thing? The Woomera rocket range, does Australia still put up rockets?
We have a space agency. Yes, technically we can. They've spent quite a bit of money in developing the space agency. I haven't really delved into that as much, more so in the satellite issue. I know that they've changed the law, which is hence why the No 5G party got instigated in the first place. So we had what was known as the Space Activities Act, which meant that any satellite that caused any damage on Australian soil, or if they were going to broadcast on Australian soil, they had to be insured for $750 million for each event. So each satellite had to be insured for $750 million. Now, the trouble is that no insurer, such as underwriters such as Lloyd's of London, will not cover any damage caused by electromagnetic radiation. So they have to, in a sense, be self-insured. Now, they changed the law, repealed the Space Activities Act here in Australia, and said that you only have to have $120 million. Now, it's got to the point where they are really able to do what they want now. And we have to step in and to try and make the laws change. So they're going to eradicate put it this way, the $120 million will be underwritten by the Australian government.
Okay.
Very similar to what they're doing with Big Pharma.
Yes, well, that's another story again. Yes, we have got a rocket lab here in New Zealand in the Mahia Peninsula, and there's been increasing noise, shall we say, from people who don't want to be part of this particular rocket system, solely because we now have back-ended it into the United States, and there are now seen to be military connotations. And there's all sorts of things what we need to be aware of.
Yeah, we have what's called the Space Liability Act. If New Zealand was to launch satellites or launch anything from its state and it caused damage, say, in another country, like Australia or somewhere else, well, then that country can be sued under the Space Liability Convention, as in the launch state. So technically, New Zealand, let's say exposure from radiation caused some sort of damage or assaulted people, for example, without their consent, then technically New Zealand could be liable under the Space Liability Convention.
Okay, all right. Well, look, Ray, I want to say thank you very much for giving me your insights and your knowledge, and to inspire New Zealanders to get off the couch and be involved, take care of your children, all biota, and the future.
You're very welcome, and thanks for having me, Sam, and good luck with everything.
Okay, thank you. That was Ray Broomhall of no5gparty.org.au speaking to us from Tasmania. no5gparty.org.au. Decide to network. Use every letter you write, every conversation you have, every meeting you attend, every email you send. And remember, even Facebook, to tweet and to express your fundamental beliefs and dreams. Affirm to others the vision of the world you want. Network through thought. Network through action. Network through love. Network through the spirit. You are the center of a network. You are the center of the world. You are a free, immensely powerful source of life and goodness. Affirm it, spread it, radiate it. Think day and night about it, and you will see a miracle happen. The greatness of your own life in a world of big powers, media and monopolies. But of 7.8 billion individuals, networking is the new freedom, the new democracy, a new transparency, and a new form of wholeness and happiness. This originated by Dr. Robert Muller, Chancellor of the World Peace University in Costa Rica, Central America. I invite you to be able to come to greenplanetfm.com, where we have over 500 interviews in our database, which you can readily download and listen to be able to inspire yourself to become the change you want to see in the world and become involved in caring for your children and grandchildren's future. We are also on Facebook, on Green Planet FM and ourplanet.org. Please come and...